This space, Bitcoin Embassy Bar, has turned into a second home for everyone, not just Stocksy Maxis, not just Bitcoiners, but for everyone that wants to learn or wants to meet more amazing people and learn more about Bitcoin.
You're listening to Because of Bitcoin, a podcast that shares the personal stories of how Bitcoin is having a real impact in people's lives, including mine. I'm your host, Mauricio Di Bartolomeo, the co-founder and CSO of Ledin. And without further ado, let's get started with today's story. How does a digital asset manifest itself in the real world? Who champions it in the absence of a leader? Who are its evangelists? Translating an idea into action and spreading its influence requires human action. And Bitcoin is no different. It's the people, the champions, and the revolutionaries who educate others that have helped the virus spread as far as it has. Paradoxically, it is us, analog creatures in meat space, who can empower a more equitable and digital future through tools like Bitcoin. Lorena Ortiz has been one of these champions for Bitcoin. She's an entrepreneur and the founder of the Bitcoin Embassy Bar in Mexico, which, by the way, I love. The embassy stands as one of the few physical places uniting Bitcoin enthusiasts and offering a welcoming environment for us to gather, connect, and learn more from each other. Lorena wears many hats as a podcaster, content creator, and Latin America community master at Fedi. She is also a fellow Bitcoin OG, and her story is one that a lot of us can relate to. In today's episode, we cover how she grew the Bitcoin community in Mexico City from essentially scratch to the powerhouse that it is today, and how she's planning to do it all over again. Hola, Lorena. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I've been wanting to speak to you for a long time, and I've looked up to your work. So I'm really excited to have you here. How are you?
Thank you very much, Mauricio. Hola, también.
So the way I like to start the show is asking you about your childhood. So could you tell people that are our listeners what it was like growing up like Lorena?
I was like the weird kid in the classroom because my mom is a teacher and she studied teaching. So she was really into making me a better kid, a smarter kid. So she didn't allow me to watch TV or have Barbies or like regular toys. So I didn't have anything like to relate to the rest of the kids. So I was the weirdo kid in the corner, really silent, really quiet. Almost nobody knew my name. Yeah, I was lonely. I just had one or two friends in my childhood. So yeah, it was weird. But now I understand my mom.
Now everybody knows your name and you're not so quiet anymore. So we'll get into that. Can you share a bit more about where you grew up and perhaps was inflation a part of your life? Because to many in Latin America, inflation is like gravity. It's a part of our lives. We don't even know it's there. It's like the absence of it when we go to the States looks like you're floating. It looks like everything is easier. It looks like they're living without this massive weight on their shoulders.
I was born and raised in Mexico City. I'm still living here and I bet I will be here the rest of my life because I really love Mexico City. But yeah, in my childhood, we weren't poor, but we were struggling. I remember my mom buying groceries at the store and checking out prices. My mom is also really cautious about the money. But I remember that, yeah, in my family, we used to have a struggling situation. But my parents really made an effort to send me to private schools to learn English. That is really useful right now at my work and my job. But yeah, I remember also when I was going to school, all the other kids were having like much better cars and other stuff. And my family was limiting everything. And yeah, so my family's background is really poor, actually. My grandmother had four kids by her own. She was a single mother and she used to wash clothes and clean other people's house to get money for her kids. Then my grandmother started working when she was 12 years old, never stopped till she could retire at 70. She studied teaching. She was able to set up a school by her own. She used to be a school owner. And my plan of life was to get that school for me, to start directing the school. Actually, I worked with her for almost 10 years.
How did you discover Bitcoin? How did Bitcoin come into your radar?
When I was 25, I realized I didn't want to get the school for me. So I told my mom, okay, if you're tired of the school, just sell it and I will do something else with my life. I don't know what, but something will show up and I will be fine. My mom was panicking, was in crisis. Oh my God, what are you going to do? Because I am a teenage mom, actually. I had a daughter when I was 17. So my mom was really worried about it. I studied social psychology. And actually, I studied that because I was going to be the director of the school. I realized I didn't want that. And I changed everything. So I kept on working on the school, but with another director. My mom wasn't the owner anymore. And I started collaborating with a friend of mine that used to have an independent record company about metal and punk.
Okay.
Because that's another part of my life. I didn't tell you. I used to be a punk rocker.
Okay. So,
my dad used to teach me a lot of stuff about music. So I started helping him because my father is a musician. I started helping this friend of mine in the independent record company. Then he told me, okay, this band that we're producing is going to have a tour on Japan. So do you want to come and help me with them? And I was like, yeah, I want to go to Japan. So I used to have some savings, but they were like savings for, I don't know, buying a house later or something. So I just took some few money from that savings to see all the stuff about the trip, right? So I asked a friend of my mom, where could I put this small amount of money for the trip just to earn a little bit more in a few months? He told me, okay, I have this friend of mine that is into something really weird. And as you like really weird stuff, you will like it. I can bet it. And he introduced me to David Noriega. When I met David, he told me about Bitcoin, not as an investment, but as an ideology. He told me about the no government control, about the self-custody, about a system where the people can actually decide and consent about the things that are going on in the system. So those were the first things about Bitcoin that really made sense to me. I told him, if what you're saying is true, because it sounds really amazing, if what you're saying is true, this is going to change the world. This is going to change everything because they can't control us anymore. It's like a huge fuck you to the system.
Growing up in Latin America, I can relate to Lorena's story. Many of us have firsthand experience living in a system that is broken. Corruption and inflation are like oxygen. They are everywhere. And many of us have seen our banks collapse while others have even got cut off from the global banking system. Experiences like this change you, and they help you understand why Bitcoin matters. Why does it matter that a government can print all the fiat money that it wants at will? You may not know the answer yet, but we do. Why does it matter that a government can arbitrarily eject someone they don't like from their financial system? You may not know the answer to that yet, but we do. This is why Latinos run towards Bitcoin. The problems it solves are problems we know all too well. Lorena grew up in Mexico in the 90s. During this time, the country was going through what was later called the tequila crisis, and this changed her perception of money completely.
90s was a really bad time for Mexico because of something that's called Efecto Tequila or Tequila Effect, that was after the period of this president that's called Salinas de Gortari and Zedillo. About this time, what happened was that there was something called Fobaproa that was supposed to be like the savings for the people, for the community, for the Mexican people, they took it all away. They robbed it. So by the time when the economy of Mexico grew so much and there was time for like restraining the credits and to take a few bucks about the foie gras, there was gone. There was nothing. Our currency was really inflated. We used to have these big bills. As a kid, we used to play around in my grandma's house. And I don't know if you have ever played escondidas. Like hide and seek, right? In English. I used to hide in some places in my grandma's house. And one day I was hiding in the closet. My foot hit something in the closet, in the floor of the closet. And there was like a huge box made of wood. I went out of the closet and ran to the kitchen to tell my mom, "Mom, I found that for a box full of bills, of coins." I took her to the closet and I showed her the box. And she had a face of disappointment that I just couldn't handle. She was like, "Oh, sweetie, you don't have a clue."
Jenna still has that little wooden box. During our interview, she showed it to me, and it was full of bills. Bills that once represented the value of months' worth of work and had now become as valuable as toilet paper. I too have a little wooden box filled with worthless bills that I kept from my time in Venezuela. These bills may not have any monetary value, but they taught Lorena and I a priceless lesson. Governments can make the value of your savings in their local currency go away overnight. But governments can't do that to Bitcoin, and that's why we're here. These worthless bills serve as a reminder of why we do what we do. So you didn't end up going to Japan. You bought Bitcoin, I presume, after Noriega told you about it. Then what was the journey after you buy Bitcoin, and how do you decide that you want to dedicate your life to this?
Okay, so I bought Bitcoin. My first part of Bitcoin was 500 pesos. That is maybe $20, $25. Because I had it in my pocket. So I told him, okay, sell me some Bitcoin. So the first day that I heard about Bitcoin, I bought Bitcoin. And he told me how to use a wallet. I bought my first small amount of Bitcoin back then. The price was $7,000. So I realized it was like going up and then a little bit down and going up. And I was like, okay, let's put it all then. So all my savings, I just put them all into Bitcoin. And then the bull run to the 20,000 occurred. So it was a good deal for me. I told David, okay, now I have this amount of money. What should I do with it? And he told me, okay, you can take just a few of it out for your savings or something and keep the rest. It was a good move, a smart move. I was really lucky because you're not always that lucky. After that, we started talking about other stuff. Then he told me his idea about opening a place that was a physical place in Mexico City for Bitcoiners. The idea was from him, but he wanted a cafeteria. And I was like, no, man, we're in Mexico. We need beer and tequila. So, yeah, we started developing the project. I found a really cool place in Roma Norte. And yeah, it took us almost a year to open the place. We opened in December of 2018.
Wow. So I have to share a little sidebar about the concept of Bitcoin embassies, because yours was one of the very few in the world. I believe there was another one in Paris, and I believe there was one in Montreal. And the reason I know this is because right around the time when you were opening your Bitcoin embassy, and the one in Montreal had opened, I was leaving Venezuela with my family and we were getting kicked out and we had to basically take our miners somewhere, but we didn't know where because the Bitcoin community was very small. There was hardly any conversations on Twitter. I wasn't in the Bitcoin talk forums. So I had to basically find somebody in Meatspace that was openly a Bitcoiner that was able to help us or guide us. So the only person I found was the Bitcoin Embassy in Montreal, which was run at the time by Francis Pouliot. And I emailed him and he responds to me and helps me, offers me guidance to bring my miners into Canada, which is where I was in school at the time. And so that kind of led me to this. My journey was deeply influenced by a physical space, much like the one you've built. And I've been to your space. We've hosted events at your space. I'm a huge fan of the Bitcoin Embassy in Mexico and continue to be. I can only imagine how many experiences you have, but is there anyone that sticks out that you would like to share?
Oh my God. Actually, all of my friends now are Bitcoiners, and almost all of them, I met them because of Bitcoin Embassy Bar. And I'm so grateful, Mauricio, because they're such an amazing group of people. Oh my God, I want to cry. Yeah, they're amazing. They're the best people I've ever met in my life.
I've met a lot of friends thanks to the embassy. You are integral part of the Mexican Bitcoin community. I am yet to meet one single Mexican Bitcoiner that does not reference Lorena and the Bitcoin embassy. So you have become this sort of center of gravity, I would say, for the Bitcoin community in Mexico. And this is, as a Latino, it's something that makes me incredibly proud. What do you think that Bitcoin Embassy has contributed to, and what would you like to see it do into the future?
Okay, so a lot of people that came around 2018-19 were clueless about what Bitcoin was. A lot of people that used to come to the bar, first of all, I used to be there from the opening time to the closing time, every day, the first year. So I met a lot of people in that year. I used to sit down with them and explain to them what Bitcoin was in like a mini class that I used to do. So a lot of friends that are now more into Bitcoin, I met them back then. So I don't like to be like, I made Bitcoiners, but actually I did.
You minted them. Actually, I did.
Yeah, I minted them, yeah. These friends, also a lot of the community, really young community, but some of them don't have any clue about Bitcoin at all. They talk about smart contracts. They talk about all this development and second layers in Ethereum and other stuff, but they don't have any idea about what Bitcoin is and how Bitcoin works. A lot of people that are really toxic, when they met somebody that is into Web3, they just reject them or treat them like really bad or make fun of them. I don't do that. I don't like that. Actually, I don't like making fun of anybody anyhow. So when somebody that is into Web3 or into Ethereum or into Polkadot or something arrives to Bitcoin Embassy Bar, I listen to them. I listen to them. I listen to them ideas. I listen to their projects, what they're doing. And I try to pull them to the dark side of Bitcoin. Yeah, I try to make them understand that it's really important for them to understand Bitcoin. They are already in Web3, right? But you have to understand where all this comes from.
Right.
And what is the base and what is like the parameter where how you should measure everything else. Because Bitcoin is one of a kind. Bitcoin is like the holy grail. And there will be nothing like that. Never again. So if you have this parameter, something that is so amazing and so great, and you compare it to all the other cryptocurrencies, then you realize that they're not that great and they're not that amazing and the technology behind them is not that shocking. So I try to make them understand a little bit more about Bitcoin, but in a kind way. So maybe this space, Bitcoin Embassy Bar, has turned into a second home for everyone, not just toxic maxis, not just Bitcoiners, but for everyone that wants to learn or wants to meet more amazing people and learn more about Bitcoin.
I think that's super important because everyone's journey is different. I've met many Bitcoiners that have started out as big Ethereum fans or big Solana fans or big this fans. And then slowly but surely, you arrive at your own conclusions. And you realize that Bitcoin is really the only main decentralized asset at scale. And that, yes, other assets and other functions can be carried out on these other blockchains, but it won't be Bitcoin. It will never be Bitcoin. It'll be something else, completely different. But it can have a very compelling value prop. I speak as a person that supports stablecoins, and I'm a big fan of stablecoins. And yes, they have trade-offs in terms of centralization and they're pegged to a particular government's currency, all you want. But when you're asking somebody whether you want a world-class centralized operator in the US to manage your float, or some gangster outlaw president that controls your corrupt local banking system, you're going to take your stablecoin all day long with a smile ear to ear. And that's what I think. I shouldn't fault that person because they understand stablecoins faster than they understand Bitcoin. If you do that, you're alienating somebody and you're making all of our jobs harder, right? So I think what you're doing, in my view, in my personal view, is the correct approach to grow the tent and to bring everybody under our tent at their own pace. We don't got to force somebody to believe or see eye to eye with you. Just get them to look at facts, right? And now, this is a great segue, bringing it back to Bitcoin, because you recently joined Fetty. And I'm very excited about Fetty. If you could please elaborate or explain to our audience, what is Fetty?
Fetty is a super app that runs in Fedimint, that is an open source protocol based on Bitcoin. This super app allows you to make community custody, allows you to make easier, faster, and cheaper transactions, and even interact with other applications of Bitcoin. I mean, you can have all your Bitcoin ecosystem in one place, but it's not centralized. It's based in the community. This is all like a voucher that says, okay, this is worth Bitcoin, right? But it's right. Not like everybody can mint this voucher. It's just like the original transaction of funding the Federation that attaches to the principal chain is the one that mints these vouchers that can be used in all the Federation. And that's why it's cheaper and faster.
Got it. So there's no nodes, there's no channel liquidity to manage. It's, I guess, simpler in that sense.
There are guardians that can mint this eCash. And there is something that is called Lightning Gateway. So that way, you're not like in a closed system, right? You can interact with other Lightning network wallets and other stuff, yeah.
And what type of work are you doing for Fetty in Mexico City?
Actually, I think it's the best job ever. It's the job that I always dreamed about. I really think if you really dream about something and you really desire something in your life, and if you work hard, the life takes you to that place somehow. I don't know how it works. I don't know why, but you take yourself to that point. So actually, this job is like the perfect job I ever dreamed about, because my charge is community master for Latin America. So my work is to connect with the communities in Latin America that I'm really passionate about. I really love Latin America. And to help them and to teach them and to make them a part of this evolution about Bitcoin that is Fedimint, right?
Now, this wouldn't be a conversation about between two Latinos and Bitcoin if we didn't talk about Bitcoin and stablecoins. So when you travel and when you talk to people about Bitcoin, people that need this the most, right? And you're trying to teach Bitcoin on this frictionless, no high fees type of world where you're already taking away this fear of high transaction fees. And so that's going away. But you're still left with this challenge of explaining to somebody why this is better for you than the local currency or than the dollar. What would you say in terms of Bitcoin vis-a-vis stablecoins and teaching the difference between the two?
We have very few stablecoins that are not centralized right now, right? And there is some points of kind of centralization, not that much, but in some of them are. And in some other, they are just centralized. And it's necessary. It's necessary at some point and at some use, because people need to have this kind of certainty at some points. You need certainty, Mauricio. Me too. So if you don't like me, like myself, if you don't like, I don't know, the government or the bank control and everything else, but you can't live right now, currently, in a Bitcoin standard reality, that would be great, right? But we can't. So we're living in a world that we need some stability some days. So you need these currencies, but you need to be aware that a lot of them can be taken away, can be frozen, can be just shut down. And that's a really important point that we need to be aware of and we need to tell other people about. Because some people like, I don't know, USDC or Tether, and they're good, they're great because they work. And that's it, right? But at some point, there is a risk, even if the company that manages these stablecoins are doing good, there is some risk always because it's centralized. So you need to be cautious about these stablecoins.
And I think one way to explain it, if you're a type of person that is against all type of authority, all type of centralization, you're going to, at a philosophical level, have an issue with stablecoins because their underlying asset is one government's currency. Really, what's happening now is you're going to the U.S. government's currency, which is really most stablecoins at scale. You're basically choosing to use the U.S. government's currency. To most people, especially Latinos, you're effectively saying, okay, if I use the Venezuelan Bolívar, the Venezuelan government can end me. And I know that the Venezuelan government is hostile against me. So I am a target from this government, but I'm not a target today from the U.S. government because I'm not doing anything wrong. I'm a legal person. I have nothing to hide. I don't have a fear of using the U.S. dollar. But I think the point that people often forget is that even governments like the U.S. can find people that they don't deem friendly, Russia, for example, and they just freeze all of their assets overnight. A lot of people just think that's not a risk to them. And practically so, I think that's true. But what you're saying is that there's always this theoretical risk, and this theoretical risk can turn into practical risk if you are large enough to get into the eyes of someone like the U.S. government, right? So there's the theoretical challenge, but I think that clashes versus the practical realities of using this for most Latinos. And in most cases, I think the practical benefits trump the theoretical risks. And so that's how I would articulated in some ways. I don't know if you would agree with that.
Even that risk can trigger by mistake. You received some tainted currency that was used for something, I don't know, somewhere else, and you are just not related at all about that. And by mistake, you get involved into something that is against you. And I remember a recent interview to Carlos Torriello, from Guatemala, where he explained that before Bitcoin, his bank accounts, his father's bank accounts were frozen and they couldn't pay the workers of their company because of that. And it was just a mistake. And it always can happen in the fiat system, in the crypto system. Everywhere can happen if you don't have self-custody. And if the currency that you're custodying is not in a decentralized system. So even if you have self-custody of Tether, it can be stopped. It can be frozen. Now I realized that having a physical place really totally helps, but you don't need it if you really want to make a difference in your community. If you really want to teach somebody else what you know, if you really want to share, if you really want to connect with other people, you actually don't need the physical place. Because there's a bitter part of what owning a Bitcoin embassy is. That is, you have to make a lot of expenses to manage a physical place. And actually, I'm always struggling about paying the rent, about paying the employees, about all the restaurant management, about a lot of stuff that most of Bitcoiners are free. And I'm like, oh my God, I envy you so much because you don't have to struggle with these issues all every month. And yeah, there's a lot of things in owning a physical place that are really hard. But you don't need it. You can start building your community from the start, posting on meetup.com. Okay, hey guys, I'm going to be at this cafe today. Who wants to join to talk about Bitcoin? And then more people will come and more people will come and more people will come. And then you can build your own community by yourself. You don't need a physical place. But it takes time and it takes effort to build a community. It's not, okay, guys, I'm here. Come on and show up. No, you have to be at that point at the cafe for 2 hours. And maybe nobody will show up. And maybe one person will show up. And it's your job to make a community out of 2 people. And then 3, 4, 5, 10, 20, 70, 100. But it has to start with your patience, your consistency about what you're doing. And yeah, you have to really make an effort to build a community like the one that we have in Bitcoin Investment.
We like to think of Bitcoin as a trustless asset. Don't trust, verify is one of the most popular mottos in our industry. Yet for a group of people that distrust so much, we seem to forget that our entire civilization is built on trust. Even today, our most sophisticated systems and civilizations run on trust. In fact, we call all societies that function the best high trust societies, and those that don't work, low trust societies. In Venezuela, I lived in a gated community and many times didn't feel safe. That's a low trust society. I got robbed twice. In Canada, you can sleep with your windows open and feel safe. That's a high trust society. Humans need to feel safe, and they need to feel like they can trust something. Most Bitcoin users don't run nodes. They trust those of us who do. To say that we are building a trustless movement is naive. With trust comes community, and with community comes adoption. That helps all of us. In a world full of NFTs and digital personas, people like Lorena have devoted their efforts to building real-life connections and creating a positive space for people to have fun and learn. At the end of the day, we live in a physical world. And no matter how much digital wealth we have, it'll mean nothing if we can't enjoy it with those who we love doing the things that we enjoy. Thank you, Lorena, and everyone else who's working to build positive spaces for the Bitcoin community to thrive in need space. If you'd like to learn more about Lorena, you can follow her at LoreBitcoin on all social media like X, Instagram, and TikTok. And to keep updated with events at the Embassy Bar, go to BitcoinEmb.com. That's BitcoinEmb.com. And if you're ever in Mexico City, I strongly recommend you stop by. Thank you so much, and we'll be back with another great episode of Because of Bitcoin. If you enjoyed this Because of Bitcoin episode, I would be very grateful for the 5 seconds it would take you to drop us a review and give us a rating on your favorite podcasting platform. This will really help us reach even more listeners. And if you'd like to learn more about Bitcoin, be sure to check out our newsletter by subscribing at ledn.io. That's ledn.io. Again, this was Mauricio Di Bartolomeo. Stay tuned for our next episode. And until then, muchas gracias y los quiero mucho. Ciao, ciao.